Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Pete and I are off on one of our walks down the Wolverhampton Canals. The birds are in fine form today, even though it's a very misty day. Damp and misty, classic British weather. So today's topic is synchronicity. So Pete, what is synchronicity?
Synchronicity is the name that we give to the phenomenon of finding meaningful coincidences. Best way to illustrate this, I think, is to give an example. And a famous one is given by C.J. Jung in his book of the title, Synchronicity, which came out in 1952, and which Jung co-authored with the physicist Wolfgang Pauli, who was a Nobel Prize particle physicist, and famous for the Pauli exclusion principle, which deals with electron pairs and spins and such like. Anyway, in that book, Jung tells a story of therapeutic sessions he was having with a patient, a female patient, and Jung characterises this patient as being hyper-rational and very, very well defended against the unconscious. He couldn't get her into a dialogue with her unconscious, without which he thought he couldn't resolve the neuroses from which the patient was suffering. Now, the patient's hyper-rationality was in many ways the source of the resistance that she had to her own unconscious, because the unconscious is irrational. It doesn't follow causal connections. It produces strange dream imagery and is responsible for peculiar hallucinations and so on. So she had a resistance. She believed in the powers of reason, which is fair enough. But she was able to sort of rationalise away most of Jung's attempts to really get her to form a relationship with her unconscious. Now, in a particular session, the patient was reporting a dream. So, I mean, she was having a go, you know, and she reported that she dreamed of a brooch that she was given. And it was a brooch that had the form of a scarab beetle. And just as she was recounting the dream, Jung heard a tapping at the window, and there was a beetle, a common kind of beetle of the scarab family, attempting to get into the room. It was just kind of like banging on the window. It was flying against the window and tapping the window. So what Jung did is he opened the window and the beetle came in, and he was able to catch the beetle and put it down on his notepad and say, "Look, there's your beetle." And it's an example of synchronicity, you know. They were talking about the dream of the beetle, and then the beetle appears. This is a coincidence, to be sure. You'd be hard-pressed to trace any causal connections between the woman's dream and the arrival of the beetle at the window. This is why Jung called synchronicity an a-causal connecting principle. You see, we see a connection there, you know, because it's the same thing. The same thing is occurring, but in these different contexts, and without any traceable causal connection between the two. Meaningful coincidence. So quite an a-causal connecting principle, because we couldn't trace the causality. And even if you are a determinist and believe that every single event in the universe is purely determined, that there's nothing random at all, it wouldn't really make any difference to the situation that Jung's describing, because from our point of view, the causality is so obscure, presuming that determinism is true, that for all intents and purposes we're forced to treat it as a-causal. So, and the patient apparently then was a breakthrough. She was able to kind of relinquish the hyper-rationality and start to actually listen rather more closely and intently and with commitment to her unconscious, and she's then, I don't know what the outcome was, but I'm presuming she was then able to resolve the neuroses which brought her to Jung in the first place. And you can see how that would be sort of quite quite shocking, you know, quite shocking to somebody, especially somebody really hyper-rational like that. One of the reasons why we decided to do this podcast on synchronicity was because we were having some synchronous events going on ourselves. A friend of ours, somebody who we just kind of recently met, said that he was going to do a poetry reading based on the poems of Rumi. And at that time, we'd actually just done a podcast based on a particular poem of Rumi, and we called this podcast The Beloved, which you can find. It's on our podcast site. So we said to our friend, well, we'll try and come to the reading and so forth. As it happened, I wasn't able to get to the reading. Anyway, after the reading, I said, well, you go and listen to our podcast, because it might be interesting to you. So after he'd given the reading, he went and listened to our podcast. And a bit later on, I said, well, did you listen to the podcast? And how did you get on with it? He said, yeah, and it was amazing, because it was almost identical to what he'd done at his poetry reading. I mean, these events, us doing the podcast on The Beloved and using Rumi, and his organising of his poetry reading evening, completely independent of each other. And well, there you go. Synchronicity. Also, at the same time, another friend who was experiencing quite a lot of synchronicity and was had been talking to us about that. I think it was just kind of like just slightly prior to the Rumi synchronicity.
Yeah, I got us thinking about it from that conversation, really, didn't it?
Yeah. So we decided. That's how we decided.
Yeah.
This is how we.
The backstory.
Yeah, that's the backstory. I mean, this is how we decide stuff.
Yeah, things happen in our immediate orbit that just spark us off in certain trains of thought, and
yeah,
then
that's right, yeah.
Fertilise our minds to
yeah.
And come up with certain topics.
And incidents of synchronicity are kind of very strong in that respect. And we've had incidents of synchronicity about synchronicity.
Yes.
Shall we? So that reason we're going to do, we're doing this podcast on synchronicity. Now, Jung was very interested in synchronicity because he thought that it offered us a route into our unconscious mind. It was a way that the unconscious could speak to us. And I think that's right. I think that's how we need to understand these events. Now, meditators and yogis and artists who try and work with the unconscious, also people who are interested in self-inquiry through methods of a psychoanalytic type, you know, where you listen to dreams and so forth, do report periods in their life where they just get loads of synchronicity. And when people are getting a lot of synchronicity, maybe several times a day, maybe almost continuously, you know, it is a sign that there's some kind of inner work going on, that the that the unconscious has been interrogated, has been prodded in its stirs.
Yeah.
But you won't get a sense. Actually, how this works, even though you feel as though the universe is talking to you, what's really happening is that you're projecting. Your unconscious is projecting. It's not your ego that's projecting. Your unconscious is projecting outwards. It's almost bypassing the defences of the ego and the conscious mind and the censorship that gets applied to unconscious content. By projecting an emotional charge into the outside world, which you then perceive back in, it's a kind of a ruse by the unconscious to speak to you. Now the unconscious will only speaks to you about that which has been invested with energy and which is endowed with energy and concern and emotion. Of course, the energy of the unconscious is emotion, that which can set things into motion. So you don't get synchronicity about everything, really. You get synchronicity about issues. You get synchronicity about unconscious contents that are associated with that which matters. That which matters to you. Now, in the case of the beetle, Jung, in his fashion, started talking about the symbolism of the beetle in Egyptian mythology, and the scarab beetle as a symbol of death. And the patient was able to actually run with that and say, there was an issue. There was an issue of fear of death that a kind of hyper-rationality was defending against. And so that, through the synchronous event, that whole issue for her, which was charged with emotion, was able to be explored. So that's how it works. It works through projection. Now we obviously interpret a synchronous event as significant, otherwise we wouldn't notice it. Probably coincidences whereby the same is resonating with the same, they're happening just all the time. But we only notice the ones that matter to us, or more strictly matter to our unconscious, which are endowed with this charge. Remember, the unconscious it seeks to express itself, particularly when there is a charge attached to some particular complex of emotions, ideas, concepts, events, etc., memories, and so forth. It does want to burst out, but the ego's job is to defend against the unconscious. And you get synchronous events when there is, when that boundary and those defences in fortress ego kind of get a bit softened or weakened or become a bit permeable in some way. And this is why people can get a lot of synchronicity when they're heading for some kind of breakdown, some kind of psychotic episode in which is the kind of scenario in which the ego is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
With unconscious content.
But if you're getting a lot of synchronicity, it doesn't mean that you are heading for a breakdown.
No.
Don't worry.
No, I mean, it certainly doesn't. So what I'm saying then, actually, is it's like it is a matter of interpretation. Finding a coincidence significant, which is of course what enables us to notice it in the first place.
As Nietzsche was talked about interpretation, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, Nietzsche said, we are interpreting animals, particularly in the late notes, 1887, 1888, in the notebooks. You find a lot of talk about how interpretation is this kind of main function of the organism. We are interpreting animals. Nietzsche actually said, under the imperative of the will to power, this kind of primordial movement of things, dance of things. And interestingly, Nietzsche made the point that not only do we interpret the so-called outside world, we interpret the inside world. Now, so the phenomenologist following Descartes are wanting to find something that's somehow immune from that interpretative faculty, and they sought in interiority, they sought something that was free of interpretation, because that would be the sure foundation of methods of inquiry, philosophical and scientific. You know, the Cartesian cogito, you know, this was the thing he couldn't doubt. I think, therefore I am. I can't doubt this. Because even to doubt it is to affirm it, because doubt is a species of thought. And that he thought that that was the sure place to build a foundation upon. But for Nietzsche, he's saying no. You know, he's saying even in the phenomenal realm, in the realm of interiority, interpretation is the name of the game there too. And that such things as causality, subject and object, and ego, you know, were interpretations. You know, our sense of ego is an interpretation under the imperative of the will to power. So this is actually a counter to any kind of phenomenological quest to find an interpretation-free realm, which in being free of interpretation would be foundational for all manner of inquiry. And if Nietzsche's right, well, they're on the hide into nothing. But synchronicity should be understood as this interpretative mechanism going full tilt. You know, it says that this is significant. But really what's happening, of course, is that this is where emotion is lodged and where it is gathered and the way it's discharged, and we'll seek method of discharge, even to the point of projecting into the world, into a world which is actually full of coincidences. So coincidences become meaningful. So synchronicity is when we experience coincidences as meaningful. So I'm suggesting, in the light of what I've just said, that you regard synchronicity when you encounter it as something useful, particularly in the quest for self-knowledge. You know, and any quest for self-knowledge involves, doesn't it, making the unconscious conscious. Obviously not all at once, because you would be overwhelmed in psychosis, but steadily. Obviously we were more masters in our own house, the more we were familiar with our own unconscious parts. And therefore that we can function in life better, the less we apply to unconscious behaviour and uncontrollable emergencies of emotion and repressed pain and repressed urges and so forth. So I'm saying think of it as useful. And even though you feel that the universe is talking to you, be a bit careful of getting, you know, being
too seduced by that idea.
Well, too seduced in a metaphysical sense by that idea. You know, there's no need to start running around and jumping up and down and shouting with glee that you found the secret. You haven't. Your brain is interpreted, and it's interpreted in the light of you, your biography, and your disposition and your endowments as a human being. You get that straight, you can kind of deal with it in a sensible way. And so you do have to be careful around this stuff. You know, I'm just, you know, you jumped in fairly quickly back then when I mentioned that, but it can be the harbinger of psychosis, but not necessarily so. You said, of course, not necessarily so. Most people experience this thing, I would say. Of course, gamblers get really enamoured with it, don't they?
Yeah.
Anyway, I think Jung certainly saw it as a great tool for establishing dialogue with the unconscious, which he thought was good for people, for his own reasons. And that's why he was interested in the I Ching. Because in the I Ching, you deliberately avail yourself of synchronicity. You know, you throw the coins, you throw three coins six times, write down the combination of heads and tails, and then look up the hexagram in the book. You see, a similar thing to do in tarot cards. You know, and that the theory is that which emerges upon the throw of the coins, the pattern which emerges, which is given an interpretation in a venerable book, which kind of talks very cryptically and symbolically about God knows what, partakes of the quality of that moment. And also, what also partakes of the quality of that moment is what you're thinking about, what you're pondering, what you're chewing over, what is making you uncomfortable. Yeah. And the I Ching gets used as an augury for the future. But the idea really is that you know the present better and then are able to have a clearer idea of what the future might bring by knowing the present better. And the ancient Chinese worldview is such that it emphasises the way in which a moment has a quality unique to that moment that permeates the entire universe at that moment. And it's a way of looking at things that doesn't emphasise causality so much, but wants to emphasise this acausal connections, you know, and see them as significant. So for Jung, this was a way of getting in, you know, getting to the unconscious and telling us where we're at. Yeah. So, I suppose my main point that I want to make about all this is if you've experienced this, and you are likely to, if you meditate, you're kind of quite likely to, or if you do things which do loosen off that hard boundary around the ego and do serve to withdraw the energy from defensiveness, you will experience this. And it's useful, and it tells you real stuff, in many ways. But I said to you, don't panic.
Because it can be a little bit weird and disturbing, can't it, sometimes?
Yeah, yeah. And I wouldn't get overwhelmed with galloping metaphysics over this, but realise it's about you. Yeah. So I think that's what I want to say about this. Is there anything else?
I think that covers everything.
How wonderful. How synchronously wonderful.
So I hope that's useful for someone or more than just one. And we'll speak to you soon.